Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. All right. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining me for today's episode here on Intuitive Awakening. We have a wonderful guest joining us today. Barbara Wythe is our guest, and Barbara is an international peace activist, award-winning author, and psychic channel with over 35 years of experience in the intuitive arts. She is the co-founder of Conflict Revolution, a revolutionary way to resolve conflicts of the psyche, based on her work channeling Albert Einstein. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to hear about your journey, and I kind of wanted to start with how you knew you were a psychic channeler. Where did that journey begin?
Well, it's kind of a long, convoluted journey, but basically I started in music. I started writing music when I was very, very young. I started playing the piano when I was 4 or 5. I started teaching myself to play piano. And then by 12, I was writing songs. And then I got out on the highway and went on the road and rock and roll for about 20 years. So that was the process that got me, because writing music is channeling, you know, and so that kind of prepped me. And at the same time in high school and beyond, my friend's mom was a channel. I mean, this is in the 70s, 60s and 70s. You didn't call it that, but right. You'd get readings with her and they were all about self-love and how to have a better life and how to work out my traumatized youth. So I knew what it was and I read tarot. But when I started to channel was officially in 1987. Cool. And I started spontaneously automatic writing in the middle of a letter. And I knew what it was, but I thought, what?
So as you're writing this letter, what is the information? And do you know who the information is coming from?
Well, at the time, the reason that I knew it was a shift, because I was a fairly sanctimonious person at the time, if you know what that word means.
Yes.
It's like I knew everything and I was going to tell you everything. And so I was writing this letter to my friend in that snarky tone saying how bad it was to be judgmental. I mean, that's how bad it was. And then it was like there was this shift and suddenly the tone changed and it said, because when you judge things, you close down the lens and you only see a little bit of the whole picture. Mm-hmm. So open up. And I could clearly see that wasn't where I was going. So, but then knowing what I knew, I thought, okay, so who are you? That was my first question. Because my psychic said she was an antenna. Like she was just picking up energy and telling you to your human face what your bigger self was trying to tell you. There wasn't any angels or dead people or Albert Einstein. So when they said, we are sound. And because I'd been in dissociative outer space because of my early childhood trauma and worked with music as a, you know, a way to survive, I was like, great, of course you are. You've been working with me my whole life, sound. And then I went on to just keep reading for people. And that's how I started.
So, okay. So you have that experience. And then I guess I personally would like to understand. So once you're channeling sound, like what other types of details are they giving you? And how do you feel comfortable making like kind of that shift from just doing your own automatic writing into giving readings for people?
I think it's the fruits. It was the fruits of the information. It wasn't who it was. It was what was it telling us to do? And what it was telling us to do, and eventually when it really came into full bloom with the psychic sorority, when the three of us were brought together and we started this study group of these channeling sessions. And when I did that and the girls asked, who are you? They suddenly said, well, you can call us angels. Mm. And I was like, wait a minute. What? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Not, no, who doesn't love an angel, but. And so we all talked about it. And we decided that what we didn't care if it was the Easter Bunny, because what it was doing was changing our lives from within. So
I forgot to ask you this at the beginning. Were you raised Christian at all? Or,
you know, my family was so horribly insidiously dysfunctional that, yes, there was a church down the way that was a Christian church, but I didn't, you know, there was probably as a young girl, you'd go to Easter Sunday services or midnight Christmas and you'd sing with the thing. But there were so many dastardly things going on at home that I had a hard time making the connection with this thing. And so I never really took to that.
Interesting. So can you walk us through the psychic sorority and how you got started with that? Like, where did that come from?
Well, after I was channeling for about 5 years, and I thought, you know, what would they say in a group? Because people would come. We do the session, record it, then they go, and they come back in maybe 6 months, and then they go. We never talked about it. It wasn't like I was doing therapy. I was just like delivering a message. So I asked everybody I knew, and nobody wanted to do it. And then this woman came to my door, Teresa, and she happened to be the wife of a musician that I knew. So she had a reading, then she sent all her girlfriends, and then she sent her best friend, Kim. And when Kim came, I always tell the story. She walked in the room, and now she was a Christian and she was very conservative, Republican, you know, pearls and shoes that matched. And she went to work at her daddy's big aerospace company every day. And she would never have gone to see a psychic, except we all get in crisis, right? And then we don't know what to do. It's like, and Teresa was saying, just go see her. I know I'm not going to. And she, so when she walked in the room, it was just, I had to literally hold on the edge of the couch. I had no idea why. I'd never met this woman before in my life. It's like, and I didn't really know Teresa. She came as a client, but so she went home and she transcribed her reading. And then she called me and said, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? It's like, whoa, nobody's ever done this before. So at the same time, I was having the thought, here's my group. They were saying, maybe Barbara will come over and we can talk more about these incredible things we're learning. And that's how we held our first group December in 1993.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of the wildest ride. I couldn't have ever told you or imagined where it has taken me. So, yeah.
So what types of information came out of your get-togethers? You said, you know, at some point the messages were coming from angels, but was it only the angels or was it other entities?
Well, interesting. I think that later on, when I met up with Einstein, which was a whole different story, but there was it's called the Party of 12. They introduced themselves to me in a particular way. I think at that party was mixed in the angels. But from where I am now, I totally understand why they had to go very, very slow. Because this is very, it's a lot of information to take in. And it's a lot of, and they said, you know, if we showed up or you were writing automatic, who are you? Well, I'm Albert Einstein. And here's some angels, and we're going to give you the unified field theory that you can later deliver to all the scientists on the 70th anniversary of my last words, which is what's happening this year. So I'm a little giddy about it. So, but anyway, it was revealed a little bit at a time, and what the angels said, it was very clear. They were here. They had a theory they wanted to test. That if humans did this special way, they were going to teach us how to resolve conflicts, the byproduct would be world peace. And they needed people to test it. And so there was the three of us and, you know, sure, little did we know. And then eventually, along in the journey, we had our first fight. And it's a long story, but the long story short is we took the thing and we did the thing. And it was like we called it Satori. And basically what it was, you know, you're in a fight, right? You're in a conflict and you're trying to like extract, you've done this and I've done that and I need this. And well, you. And when we got the transcript, because I said, look, let's do what the angels want us to do. And the sentence I read, if you're involved in a conflict, the root of your part of it is in you.
Hmm.
And when they said that, it's like we took a little, we stuttered, you know, like a train coming to a halt. It's like, but you, yeah. And then we kind of all got it at the same time and kind of started crying. And I said, here's what I need to do. I need to listen to you more. And that's what she was asking me to do. But I was like, no, you. And she said, and here's what I need to do. And then she said, you know, what I was, we had been fighting. But if we just had come to the table primed to, first of all, take responsibility for ourselves, that's what happens.
Mm, yeah. So what come, okay. So out of the psychic sorority, you develop what's called the conflict revolution. Is that correct?
Yes.
So can you walk us through that a little bit? Because what's the difference between like conflict revolution and conflict resolution?
Conflict resolution is a process where you sit down at the table and you make sure that you're coming from compassion and you each negotiate your needs. Conflict revolution is exactly the opposite. It's like you are shown a mirror, a very simple map of your inner psyche, intellect, intuition, emotion. You got a witness. And you first, we teach you a little, it's very simple. And everybody knows it. It's just the way it's put together is so brilliantly, elegantly Einsteinian, is that when you get a trigger, you identify what you think it's about somebody else. And you take that and you find the thread inside you. Whatever you have to do, you have to sit and feel and breathe for a while. Don't project. So let's say you're triggered by your friend and you think that she's been so disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, you know, well, it's bad to be judgmental, that kind of thing. If we, first of all, honor whatever the feeling is, because there's always a feeling behind that, right? If you feel disrespected or any of that. So honor it. And we have a whole way we teach you how to not let that emotion fuel any thought. And then we take the sound bite. What did she do to you? Tell me what she did to you. Well, she was so disrespectful. Okay. Where are you? Are you being disrespectful of yourself? Is your intuition telling you no and you're saying yes, or intuition is telling you yes and you're saying no? That's the basic core disrespect that we do to ourselves. And we don't know it because we don't understand the operating system yet. But when we do, it's like, whoa, it's like world peace in a day, I think, because it's really, really powerful alignment in a very, very simple way.
Yes. And how have you taken this system, I guess, or how have you applied this elsewhere? Have you taught this with your group to other groups of people? Or,
well, I started training in 1999 at a nonprofit in Minneapolis I worked for, Women Venture, and it was a staff development. And we just, you know, did the research. I did a bunch of channeling sessions. We put together all the stuff we learned from having fights and doing it, and mm-hmm. kind of organized a way to present it. And then from there, I started training it myself. I was doing in Women Venture, we did jobs in the trades for women, you know, some women coming out of prison. And I taught it as personal empowerment, anger management, conflict revolution itself. And then later on, when I really started to get, I wrote a book called Imagining Einstein, and that started to take me international. And then I trained it all over the world to people everywhere. I'd have groups of 25 people in a room and everybody's got their conflict. It's so much fun, you know, because everyone's like, oh, wait, maybe it means, you know, she doesn't respect you. Maybe you're looking at, and it becomes kind of a really exciting way to learn. And yeah, it's been great. I'm overwhelmed with what I thought, you know, we are sound. Well, where am I going? Into yeah. this great place. So
definitely. And I'm interested also in, okay, at what point during all of this does Einstein's spirit make contact with you? And is it yes. with you or is it with your group?
No, it's with me. And it's done because we publish our book, Diaries of a Psychic Sorority, mm-hmm. and I think 97. And my literary agent called me this following year on the anniversary of Princess Di's death. And she said there was a tabloid in London that wanted a interview with Princess Di from beyond the grave. And could I do that? And that was another one of those moments where I was like, what? What are you talking about? I've just learned now that I can communicate with like Teresa's mother and other people. I mean, I'm getting used to this. And then it's like, how do you do that? I mean, usually the people who had passed on were showing up to me and getting me to get messages to their living friends and relatives. So I thought, okay, let's try it. And I just did it. I channeled with like typing. I guess I channeled the questions and the answers, and then I printed it out and I read it and I just wept. It's like, I can hear her voice. And aside from all the details about what happened and Dodie, and it's like, her message was, if everyone who put flowers at the palace would do conflict resolution, basically, we could have world peace in a day, because you're all stars in heaven. And so she was bringing this message of world peace, and the tabloid didn't want it. I'm sure because they were looking for something about Charles and Camilla, and she completely would never even breathe a word about them the way she was. But anyway, Christina, I made this long list of people who, well, maybe there's other famous dead people, you know, and it's like Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and I'd go to them and yes or no. And then we got to Nicole Brown Simpson, which was OJ's wife.
Right.
And by the time we got to John Kennedy, he said, put your list away. We'll tell you who's coming up. We are a party. We've been here in afterlife working to help you have world peace, and we want you to deliver these messages, but we'll tell you because we're already here. It's like, okay. And then he said Einstein. And I thought, oh, geez, I didn't even think of him. But when I did that one, the voice that came out of me was the voice of every reading I've been doing.
Really?
It was the voice of sound.
Interesting.
It's a vibe. It's not a, like, you know, this is my grandmother's voice. It's a thing inside me, you know, because I'm channeling it and it's coming out of me, and I'm thinking to myself, and this is why I have to go slow, because I was like, wait a minute. Are you telling me? I even had this weird accent we used to joke about that I could never duplicate, like when I wasn't channeling. So that was the first introduction to it. And I put out the Party of 12 in 2001, I think. But I was still very reluctant. And honestly, that was the kind of the split where, like, it was time for us to go this way anyway. But it was like, we didn't really sign up for that. Because it's not like the angels. It's not that kind of book. There's some tough stuff in there. But that's okay. Now that we're in 2025, all of these materials are so pertinent and timely for where we are in life.
So, okay. So Einstein comes through, and what are his biggest messages that he wants to share from beyond?
Well, there were in the Party of 12, there were just like wonderful, brilliant things like the new education, just teach him to channel. If you teach them to channel, you don't need technology. You don't need lessons. They can access everything and have that creativity. And then he also talked about, you know, autism and all of that being actually highly spiritual, telepathic natures that are just so, so sensitive that they just can't take it. But the real message was that in 2005, I thought, I loved him so much. I thought, I'll just do a little book for him. I don't know what he's going to say or what. I don't have any idea. And this was him in a nutshell telling me, I'm going to deliver to you a unified field theory that I never got to in life. And it's going to have a map of human consciousness, which is how we interact with the creative field that's creating the world. And the biggest one was that he gave me scientific, quantifiable definition of compassion as, he said it was the fifth fundamental force, but we've changed it now that it's the first fundamental force. And it's the creative intelligence field that uses the other four fundamental forces and human consciousness to impel the creation of the physical world one step at a time.
Oh, so, okay. Well, let me ask, when you have this, you know, one-on-one dialogue with Einstein, were you already like very scientifically minded? Like, how long did it take for you to unpack what he was saying and really understand? Because I think first and foremost, I'm not aware of the unified field theory. Do you mind walking us kind of through that?
In science, for a long time and during his day, there was a different science that you'd have to apply to the microcosm than was applied to the macrocosm. And the unified field was going to find a way to figure out how it all worked together. And they couldn't find that. And Einstein sort of was, in life, he kind of poo-pooed the quantum stuff, you know, and he really didn't. And I think in the end of his life, he kind of regretted that he didn't look at it more than that he pushed it away. But so what he delivered as far as that is this, it's this map. And the whole unified field theory is based on the idea that the source of everything is in the center of the earth and that it operates like a black hole. And it answers your question. When he said that to me, I'll never forget. I was living in Folly Beach, South Carolina, in my workroom. And I was kind of going, okay, because I'm not scientific. I want to be a rock star. That was all I ever wanted to do. I kept going this way and they kept pulling me this way. And so, and I said, okay, so you're telling me I have to go out on some stage and tell the world that the earth is in the black hole and it takes a lot to ingest. And I think the skepticism that I've always shown, you know, like when they say they're angels, it's like, what? Is necessary because we're not supposed to be just idle followers. You're not supposed to just be listening to Barbara Wood because she's saying it. I mean, I'm an interesting person, but even Einstein, it's like, don't listen to me. I'm telling you the truth. Let the truth sink in. And so when that book came out, there was a lot of validation. I mean, it wasn't completely like I'm about to go do in Barcelona. Just here and there, like I was at a metaphysical meetup in Philadelphia, and I thought they were going to be like angel people, but they were like amateur physicists and chemists. And I was like, oh God. It's like, okay, I talk to dead people. All I ever wanted to be was a rock star. So don't ask me any scientific questions, but will you listen to what my imagined Einstein has to say? And their responses just made me go, all right, here we go. This has got to be something. But it took a long time. It did.
Yeah. So, okay. And again, I feel like this is a lot of information. So
no.
When you're channeling him, again, you said the center of the earth is the source of...
It's the source of everything. It's the zero point. It's when you have a black hole. Well, he says compassion is at the root of everything, and it impels energy to create consciousness, to step out of the nothing and into the everything and create one, the first step. This is step by step, right? Mm-hmm. First step is one singularity that it's like we call it your compilation of consciousness. It's your particle. Has all the math in there that's making up the table and the chair and everything that's being projected from the source, like a black hole does this, from the source into the lens and creates the world. And there's a lot of complexity in between that. And but that's kind of the basic idea of the beginning steps of how matter manifests. It's the matrix that everybody's talking about they want to escape from. I'm like, no, you're in charge of it. We can make stuff when we align it. So...
yeah. So in addition to compassion, you said that was the first step.
Yeah. Compassion is the first fundamental force. It's the intelligence that's going to start the whole ball rolling.
Okay. And then what are, would you mind walking us through a few of the others?
Oh, yeah. So you've got your three human dimensions of your intellect, your intuition, and your emotion. And when you're in the place we say aligned to compassion, it looks like this. Your feelings are all openly, freely flowing up into your intuition, and they're informing your intuition of the big picture that your intellect can't see, right? Intuition is always going to tell you the next most advantageous step for the good of the whole picture. And then it gets to intellect, and this is where free will operates. So intuition can tell you to rest, but if intellect takes over and says, no, I have too many things to do, I'm not going to rest, that, Einstein says, is the root of every single conflict in the whole entire world, is that intuition is here, it's the voice of God, and intellect is the voice of man, so to speak. And we've been given the power because we have to learn how to use it, so we're going to do it until we get it right. So when we're aligned, when it gets to the intellect, our minds have been trained to be so in present moment, not what's tomorrow, what's today, what did I do last night, blah, 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 blah. Voices of culture, a lot of propaganda coming at us. We get that mind wide open, so we're so in present moment that we're watching the miracle of our lives taking place right now, but we're listening always. What's intuition going to tell me to do? And then you just do it. Now, that to get to that place, you have to work through all those layers of what we've all trying to been healing from, you know, lifetimes, civilizations of trauma and fear-based culture.
So many people would probably say, I have a lot of trouble, or they would have a lot of trouble listening to their intuition. What does it sound like? How can I access it? How would you advise them?
Well, I would say that the way that we learn about our parts, our spiritual organs, is we develop a witness, right? We're going to step outside ourselves and we're going to pay attention. And we, first of all, we separate them so that when you're listening for your intuition, you're feeling into it here. It's a heart-centered thing. And sometimes it's, you know, when you're in your, sometimes it's voices. Sometimes it's just you just intuitively know you're supposed to do this. There's ways to learn about it. And the intellect is up here, and it's those horses, you know, the wild horses. But intuition is always something that's going to tell you to take the next most advantageous step for the good of the whole situation. And that's the, you know, the Mother Mary God, like we're going to be your moral compass, and we're going to help you know what is the best step for everything. And then when it gets to your mind, is it going to say, you know, no, I know better. And that's when conflicts happen, you get sick, and then you're tired, and you get fights. And so that's what our training is. And it's really exciting because I think people get it pretty quick, but you have to be willing to watch yourself. I think that's the big thing.
Yes, definitely. And I think also people, even when you're receiving that information, which could be in maybe seemingly contradiction to what your mind is telling you, I think a lot of people have a hard time trusting that information.
It's because they don't know themselves. They haven't stopped. If you stop and take the time to do this, you have to pay attention, but that's what we need to do right now in culture, because we haven't been paying attention. And because we haven't been paying attention, some really awful things have happened.
Yes.
In our world. And we're now poised at the edge of this strange abyss of what are we going to do? And the only way is inward. Every single person has to go in. It's the only way. And it's why we're here. It's because we're not doing it. I mean, a lot of us are. I think we're still here because those of us who are. But I think this is a time when the rest of everybody, and then they will or they won't. And spirit will, it's perfect for them, you know, back to afterlife, back to the party, come back, stay at the party. I think it's all going to be okay.
Yes, definitely. So how has, I know you spoke a little bit about this, but how has his new theory kind of been received?
I was at the Science of Consciousness conference last April, and I got a little tiny piece of a presentation in the back of some room. You know, I wasn't speaking. I was like in the RV park of it. And the people that I talked to, which were like these young astrophysicists and these, you know, neurobiologists, just young people all excited. They just loved it. And then there were some older scientists who I talked to and had some communication with an email afterwards. And he was saying, yeah, you're onto something. So this next in July in 2025 in Barcelona, they're having the next conference. And I submitted an abstract to speak and I got picked. And I'll be July 8th. That's one day short of the 70th anniversary of Einstein's last manifesto. And it's so powerful because basically the manifesto was find ways, world leaders find peaceful ways to resolve your conflicts because we won't survive World War III. So it's like he was psychic. And it's the 70th anniversary. So something big is about to happen. And I don't quite know what it is, but I've watched it fall into place like for years, actually, but that I can deliver his message, which will basically be some kind of message about how we can't weaponize science anymore. We just can't weaponize it.
So is he still today coming to you through these sessions with like newer information?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
And did you ever ask him, you know, why did you pick me? I don't have like a background in science, you know, like why did you pick me?
I think that was why though. I think it was purposefully done because, I mean, he said the reason we were doing it this way is because this information is going to inspire the scientists, the people who know how to do the math. We'll just seed them with it. You don't have, because if you think all those years of adapting and, you know, having mental health issues about, am I crazy and blah, 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 that now suddenly math is going to come out of my mouth. I was like, no, this is where it ends. So, yeah, I think that's why.
Oh, my goodness. So were there any other, you know, scientists in the afterlife who've approached you, you know, on similar topics, or I don't know, who maybe collaborate with Einstein as well?
Yes, yes. This just happened. It was that Jung started to appear a couple years ago. He showed up and I was like, well, I don't know, Jung. And in Party of 12, Sigmund Freud has sort of took that, you know, psychology seat at the table. And when Jung showed up, Jung has 12 aspects. You know, he developed this idea that you have 12 aspects in your mind, mm-hmm. whatever they are, I don't know. But he recently, we channeled him last winter, and it was pretty astounding because I asked him, why did Freud sit in the seat? Why didn't you? Why wasn't it Jung? Because he treated Einstein's son in real life for psychiatric troubles. And Jung said, because Freud had some splaining to do, basically. Because Freud was not a good man. I don't mean that ugly, but he used his psychiatry to basically perpetuate bad things on young women. So Jung split from him in real life. He wouldn't ever talk to, he wouldn't be involved in any of that. So when he had some splaining to do, but then Jung also said he held back and kind of created the architecture of the party. Like we needed to have these 12 aspects and these seats and what they represented. And then they recruited, you know, Jackie O, and there was Johnny Versace, who was a, you know, fashion designer that got murdered, and mm-hmm. Anwar El Sadat. And so there's a Jesus Christ was there. And he laid back to be that 13th, kind of holding the space for the 13th, because there's some sort of energetic configuration in 12 plus one, sort of like Jesus and the disciples. There was an energy around that numbers too. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's really, really interesting. It's so interesting.
So I guess I'm personally curious about this. I, you know, from my personal beliefs, I know I say I know, but I believe that we reincarnate here and elsewhere, you know, for growth and experiences. And I guess I'm very curious what you think about these spirits and their kind of like, I'm going to use the word attachment, but yeah, attachment to the earth in a sense that they want to still continue to be involved in, I don't know, Earth's evolution or what transpires here. Like, what do you think about why certain spirits that you've channeled are so concerned about what's happening on the earth, even though they're already on the other side?
Well, because I think the other side is undeniably and inexplicably that word connected to the physical world. And I think like, I wish I could show you the maps, because it really makes it better to understand. But basically the idea is, if you think about the center of the earth, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's your gravitational wave. It's coming up to, you know, what is it, May 18th, 2025, and it's creating all your world. And that's the only part where there's time and space. The rest of it is in infinite, and it's spinning at the speed, it's moving at the speed of light squared. So it slows down to get to the lens. So in another life that's emanating still out of the center of the earth, it's got different programming, like different, you know, your different DNA, the different space time, the different. So here's your life in Ireland, mm-hmm. up here in 900. And so this has a string of its own, and this has a string. So they're taking place kind of concurrently. But in here, we have to go, oh, wait, it's 900, blah, blah, blah. But we're not like, we're moving linearly. We're moving, you know, many aspects to us. So you actually can have those two. And I actually had a long learning experience about, you know, I guess they call it timelines now. I'm not really sure how you're on it. You bring in some past life and that's another timeline. And she really lived through me, and she had been traumatized. And that took about 4 years of feeling like I was completely schizophrenic. But I looked at it like, okay, I'm going to put her outside me. I'm going to see what she needs. Like, she's me. And through this long process, was able to heal her, heal me. And apparently her life changed. Like, instead of her Viking husband left and got captured by the whatever and tortured, he waited a day, and none of that happened, and they had grandchildren, and you know, so it's just all so mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah,
how does this all happen?
Yes, but they're still invested though in what I don't know, like, I guess just in the events of the world or moving the world forward in consciousness.
And I think that happens because when we die, we take with us what we're emotionally attached to. You know, that's why the Buddhists spend their whole life getting unattached, so that when they die, they're not going to bring anything with them. And then you're in whatever they go to. And I think a lot of people leave attached to their friends and family. And when you do that, you can't just go, oh, well, I guess I'll move on. You are energetically attached, like you're one still, which is again Buddhism. They detach. So over years and years and years of traumas and pains and unresolved and living in fear, it's like we have to. So now is our time to get that to resolve all that conflict within. And you're not attached to anybody. You're not attached to the woman who you think, you know, dissed you with disrespect at all. You know, it's not her. So I just think there's a big awakening. And I personally think that when that time happens, like you're saying, why are they hanging around? Because they just love the earth and they love their families and they love, love, love so much. But when that happens, when we liberate ourselves from all of that, then I think that's when that veil lifts, right? They always talk about the dead will rise up. Well, I'm sort of right now living in that kind of experience as I'm preparing to take this message to the world, is that I feel like the entire world and all the generations and the party and all my dead musician friends, and there's a mom's corner and there's the angels behind us. And, you know, it's like, All right, here we go. And when that happens, I'm very excited to see how this new earth, the results of it.
Yes, definitely. Well, Barbara, it was great having you on today. Thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you. I know I'm really blah, 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 but I'm just been so excited.
It's exciting. And if people want to connect with you, how can they find you?
Yes, go to BarbaraWith.com. I've got a conflict resolution challenge I want everybody to go take. It's a free download of the very basics of conflict resolution. I also have a free 12-week diary if you want to like do the 12-week challenge, place to look at and focus on. And if your listeners want to have a hour-long reading for the price of a half-hour reading, I would do that too. And for you too.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, Barbara. We're so happy to have you on. Everybody, thank you for listening, and take care. Until next week. Bye-bye.